Roy Orbison. Now, I think at 12:30 a.m., I think that's local time, Michael Rubin, resident scholar of the American Enterprise Institute. Michael, is that correct? 12:30 where you are?
Correct. 12:30 it is.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Are you talking to military folks out there?
Yep. The 130th Engineering Brigade is heading into northern Iraq.
Bless your heart. And you're talking to them. God bless you. That's great. Let me ask you about this meeting today, and then let's get into the country, the politics of this. First of all, is it a little awkward to have the presence of the two countries, or because of the issues being, you know, so obviously shared issues that it's appropriate to have them both at the same time, Karzai and Zardari?
It certainly is appropriate to have them both at the same time. Of course, even though President Obama will be meeting with both of them together, there's also going to be separate meetings, first with Afghanistan President Hamid Karzai, and then with Pakistan's President Zardari.
All right. Here was my take from reading the papers. Tell me what's right or wrong with this. The Obama administration is somewhat more arm's length with Karzai. They felt that Bush was too avuncular and thus had trouble asking him to do things, so couldn't press him hard enough. With Zardari, I was watching some of the hearings yesterday, Howard Berman's hearings, and it looks as if they were roughing up Holbrooke a lot, saying, you guys want to bail him out, you want to help him, but they are not keeping the promises, they're not doing what they're supposed to do with the money, and Holbrooke is saying, guys, we got a perilous situation there. Do I have this right?
You generally do. One thing I think we need to emphasize is just how strained the relationship between President Obama and Karzai have been. During the campaign, then-Senator Obama was sharply, sharply critical of Karzai for not doing enough to promote good governance. I think it was during his July 19th trip to Afghanistan, Obama's first trip to Afghanistan, he got out and he told the press, I told President Karzai, this is a quote, that I thought that he needed to really focus on issues of corruption and counter-narcotics to counter the narcotics trade with more aggressively than he's done so far. Then he told CNN, I think the Karzai government has not gotten out of the bunker and helped organize Afghanistan and government, the judiciary, police forces in a way that would give people confidence. Then, during the second presidential candidate debate on October 7th, Obama said, we have to have a government that is responsive to the Afghan people. And frankly, it's just not responsive right now. The relations got so tense that after President Obama was elected, when Vice President-elect Joe Biden met with Karzai, the meeting got so tense that Biden reportedly walked out.
Is Obama right to be tough on Karzai like this?
He is right to be tough to some extent. Karzai has done a great job. He remains popular. People say that his popularity has declined, but that's saying that it's declined from 80% to 60%, according to the polls. That said, corruption is a problem, and as the New York Times reported, and reported rightly, I'm surprised it took so long, Karzai's brother is alleged, seems to be involved in the drug trade.
Okay, so a little pressure on him, or a little more pressure on him, would be a good thing.
That's true, but at the same time, we need to be very careful when there isn't as many alternatives out there. This is a consistent theme which I find fraught with in U.S. policy, that we tend to get so involved in the politics of the personality that we don't develop a system which has alternatives, and then it becomes a problem if we try to take down that personality and find that there are no alternatives.
All right, let's go to the other country. Let's go to Pakistan. Treatment of Zardari, and it seemed from, again, watching part of this hearing, Michael, that the president and his team are very eager to prop up this crowd, very nervous about the Taliban. The House committee was a little more concerned about the money being accountable.
Indeed. The problem is that Zardari and before him Musharraf, the former president, the former military president, that is, have both struck deals which created safe havens for the Taliban in the northwest frontier province. These deals have backfired, most notably the so-called Malakand Accords, which were signed last February after President Obama took office. And then what this did was allow Sharia, Islamic law, to be imposed on the Swat Valley. In the course of 2 months, the number of Taliban fighters in the Swat Valley, this former resort area, doubled to around 8,000. And then just a couple weeks ago, they marched on a neighboring district, which is only 60 miles from the capital, Islamabad. The situation has gotten so dire, really, that Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has gone twice to visit his Pakistani counterpart in Rawalpindi, which is a huge urban slum right next to Islamabad.
We talked to you, I think, 2 weeks ago about this, and I said, where do you put the odds of the Taliban, you know, toppling this government or getting control of key parts of the government? I think you put it at about 20 or 30%, if I remember.
Correct.
Is it about?
But when you're talking about a nuclear capable, a nuclear armed state like Pakistan,
that's
20 or 30% is way too high.
Is it higher or lower today?
It's higher. I mean, the large question right now, the first question isn't whether the Taliban can take control directly. President Zardari was on television doing an interview yesterday saying it's completely unrealistic that the Taliban would take control. Remember, we have an army of 700,000 people.
Yeah, but you talked about that army as being several different things, right? Go ahead.
Exactly. That's the key problem. The problem is that the army isn't necessarily all on the same page.
Right.
That traditionally, while we see the Islamism, the Taliban, and so forth as a threat, the army has become a bastion of Islamism. And then there are factions within the army, which even when the army says that they are doing the right thing, other factions, rogue elements, if you will be supporting the Taliban and so forth. And when it comes to questions over chain of custody, over the nuclear program, this is very worrying indeed. But what we see is Holbrooke basically saying, look, we've got to deal with the cards we've been dealt. And there's been talk, I believe, that while we have arranged a donor conference for $5.5 billion for Afghanistan, this is all dealt with in Tokyo a couple weeks ago. Supposedly, the administration is seeking around $400 million to really train the Pakistani army to take on the Taliban to address these problems at the border. The problem is, just because you're throwing money at the Pakistani army doesn't mean that it's going to be effective, especially, I mean, the nature of training programs is there are no instant fixes.
But what do you mean border? They're already in the country.
Well, the problem which we've had there's two problems here. The first problem is questions over safe haven inside the Northwest Frontier Province. That's problem number one. Problem number two is that the Taliban isn't only threatening the Pakistani government, which is what's in the news now, but they're using the safe havens to launch attacks in Afghanistan.
This
is really the reason why we have this trilateral summit.
I got you. I see.
And President Karzai of Afghanistan has basically said his chief priority in talks is getting the Pakistani government to shut down the safe havens. I guess the lesson that can be drawn from this is, when you give safe havens to Islamic radicals or other terrorists, no good can come of it. It's both an external threat and an internal threat.
And you're not going to be able to contain them where you put them. Michael Rubin is the resident scholar of the American Enterprise Institute, and we're glad to have his judgment and advice. I'm curious, does the administration reach out to you at all for your judgment and advice?
Not so much on this issue. I know that they pay attention to some of what I write and say on Iran, but on Afghanistan, I think they're frankly just scrambling, and the nature of Richard Holbrooke is to listen to no one but himself. It's actually a problem within the administration.
Okay, so you're not confident they've got the right people in place. Is that fair?
I'm not confident on either policy that they have the right people in place.
All right, what would you recommend if you could write policy for the president, what he should say or do today, tomorrow with Karzai of Afghanistan and Zardari of Pakistan?
Well, I have to hand credit to President Obama. I do think with this trilateral summit, he's on the right track. First and foremost has to be to deny safe haven to the Taliban. We have a situation where...
Do you think he'll press for that, Michael?
I think he will at this point. The question is whether he can get his administration on board, whether he can get the State Department on board, and so forth. I do think the military understands this. It's just when Secretary of State Hillary Clinton or Special Envoy Richard Holbrooke say to Pakistan, look, you've got to have land reform, you've got to have soft power to bolster security, that's all well and good, but it doesn't address the fundamental issue of Islamist ideology, and we've got to stop beating around the bush and recognize that that's a threat, and that if it...
So the president's kind of acting like a president here.
the president is kind of acting like the president here. I mean, I may be critical generally of President Obama, but in this case, he's doing the right thing. The question is whether he can get his whole administration on board, because we're still at such an early point in the administration that different power centers within the U.S. administration are trying to pursue, try to be the lead on policy, and that creates a lot of policy confusion.
Yeah, but that tells me that he's taking his, getting his wits on this from someplace other than Holbrooke and Clinton, maybe out of his own head.
Perhaps this is the case. Now, it's also the case that he, when it has come to Pakistan, he hasn't been afraid to use military force. We've had the issues of the drone attacks on the Taliban, and that's a good thing. In fact, one of the captured Taliban leaders say that the only thing which is really bothering the Taliban right now isn't pressure from the Pakistani government or the Pakistani army. It is the Taliban attacks which keep them on the move, and that uncertainty
the drone attacks.
Works to our favor.
The drone attacks,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right, so he's no safe haven for Taliban. The advice to Pakistan. What's the advice to Afghanistan? Same, no safe haven for Taliban?
No safe haven for Taliban. At the same time, we are working very much towards the elections in Afghanistan.
And does he say, excuse me, Mike, does he say to both of them, we're with you, America's with you, we'll support you, American military will support you in Afghanistan?
Yes, he should.
Okay.
He should say that. The reason is that fighting a war isn't just, there's not just the military component, there's also, if you will, the informational or psychological component. And if the Taliban and if the opposition think we are shaky, then it's in the interest of everyone in that region to either test us or to sit on the fence until they see where we're going to go. The problem which both Obama and Biden have is the perception that they are weak. And indeed, they may well be. This is a perception spread by the idea of the withdrawal from Iraq in the face of terrorism and so forth.
All right. Can you hold? Can you give us one more quick, short segment?
Of course.
Thank you very much. Hang on, because we have a couple questions. You have a question for Michael Rubin. Now is the time. 866-680-6464. 866-680-6464. He may have to go to a luau or something at 1 or 1:30, so we want to let him go. It's 12:46 out there at night. We appreciate him staying on. Really a terrific expert and insightful man. Stay with us. Michael Rubin is the resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. He joins us tonight, where he is in Hawaii. Thanks very much, Michael, for staying with us.
No problem. Thank you.
We have a number of calls from Michael, so folks, if you could be concise in your question, it would be helpful. Let's go to Todd in Atlanta. Hey, Todd. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning. My question is regarding India and the terrorist attacks launched against India from Pakistan, and also about the weapons that Pakistan is requesting. I've heard that they really want these weapons to use against India instead of the terrorists.
Well, Todd is absolutely correct. This is the consistent problem we have, that, for example, we talk about giving $400 million worth of weapons to and military equipment to the Pakistanis to secure the Afghan border, and what they request are heavy equipment that could only be used against India. From the Pakistani strategic point of view, India is first and foremost their problem. They tend not to see Afghanistan as much of a problem, and that indeed becomes a problem for us.
All right, simple question. If you're sitting there near Islamabad, can't you see your problem is that the Taliban may be taking over your country, not India?
Well, this is the frustration. The Pakistani army has decided that India is a greater threat than the Islamists, especially when within the army you don't have a trusted, loyal institution. You have an institution that is permeated by an ideology which has led them to support the Taliban in the first place. In fact, what we're trying to do is really deal with an institution which is rotten to the core.
Okay. And that institution is?
The Pakistani army, or at least certain segments of it. The other issue, of course, is Pakistan and the Pakistani army have turned a blind eye towards Islamic radicals who have staged terrorist attacks in India. This is a continuing problem, and India is right to be suspicious.
All right, so you got the Taliban threatening to take over the country. You got the army to withstand, hold them back, but the army's rotten to the core.
Exactly, and also the army has a blind spot toward Islamism.
I got it.
When Pakistan was founded, it was founded around not an ethnic identity, but a religious identity. We talk about Iraq, for example, as a nation of Arabs and Kurds. Pakistan doesn't like to talk about ethnicity because they've had both ethnic separatist problems with the Pashtun, the dominant people in Afghanistan, and also a minority in Afghanistan. They've had ethnic problems and continue to with the Baluch, who are in the south of the country. And in 1971, they had a civil war that killed hundreds of thousands of people and ended with the succession and independence of what now is Bangladesh.
Let's go to Terry in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Terry.
Two hypotheticals. One, if it appears that the Taliban are close to taking over the country, are we ready and are we able to go in and secure the nuclear weapons before that happened? And two, if it got past it, they controlled not only the country but the weapons, what choice do we have other than a full-scale war inside Pakistan? And
thank you.
Depend on any of our allies to help.
2 minutes, Michael.
Well, I mean, Terry has asked both are $64,000 questions. The U.S. military and Admiral Mullen have bent over backwards to say that those weapons are secure. However, they don't give me any statements to provide confidence there. If I could, and with regard to the second question, this is the danger, really. It highlights the danger of proliferation, and it should give us pause to consider not just what goes on in Pakistan, but, for example, what goes on in Iran. When we talk about these countries having nuclear weapons, my rule of thumb is if you can't predict what the system of the government will be in 10 years, you don't want that country to have nuclear weapons.
That's an interesting test. If you can't predict what kind of government they'll be, don't let them have nuclear weapons.
Exactly.
I got to say, from what you're saying, I just don't think the prospects are good in Pakistan. The options just don't look good.
No, this is the real problem with Pakistan. None of the options look good. That's exactly where we are right now. And then the question comes, containing the nuclear weapons, protecting the nuclear weapons, the chain of custody and so forth, and then slowly rolling back this Islamism within the army. This is a broader question which we had, for example, in Turkey. The army has stood as a bastion of secularism against Islamic radicals. However, it's become trendy in the United States to presume that there's no problem with moderate Islamism. I use Islamism as not the religion, but as an ideology. And the problem is, this is how it started in Pakistan, and it crescendos to a point where we do have real security concerns.
Moderately better prospects for Afghanistan, you would say?
Moderately better for Afghanistan. The big challenge in Afghanistan coming up is going to be the elections. And we're also going to be in a situation of having to contribute around 20,000 more troops to allow these elections and the preparation for these elections to occur.
Thank you, Michael Rubin. As always, just terrific. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Rubin is now going to go talk to our military engineers, I think, in Hawaii. He's in Fort Bliss, Texas. He's here, he's there, he's everywhere talking to our guys in uniform. God bless him for giving him the knowledge they'll need to navigate these places. Boy, I'll tell you, this is a tricky thing. I kind of had a sense that Obama was better on this. But Seth, tell me this. Why is Obama better on this than his Secretary of State and his emissary?
Not what we would have expected, is it?
Well, I mean, he hires Holbrooke and Clinton.
Right.
Why not hire people who agree with you or who will do your bidding?
Right.
I'll be back. It's Bill Bennett. We have 2 hours.